everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas and concepts and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Here's an interesting question for you. How many of you have ever discussed what it's like to share your bed? Your bed. You know, who do you sleep with? Do you sleep alone? How do you sleep? Today I want to explore some additional aspects about sleeping that I find fascinating and I think is rarely discussed in, there are not many shows on it. Sleeping. Because you probably fall asleep listening to them. But there are secrets to how you sleep. You know, everybody's got a sleep secret. How many therapists do you know who ever said to you, tell me about how you sleep. Tell me your ritual for sleep. Do you know if you told your ritual for sleep to anyone, they would understand a tremendous amount about you? And that's what we're going to do today. Today we're going to explore with you some of these idiosyncrasies about sleeping. And we're going to talk about some sleep disorders, too, about sleep problems that people have. But in case you don't think it's really important, how do you go to sleep? How do you go to sleep? Remember your mother used to say, go to sleep. Would you go upstairs and just close your eyes and go to sleep? Is that the way it works? Is go to sleep the kind of thing you could follow on a command if you're not exhausted? There are enough people out there who are so tired that all you have to do is say to them, go to sleep, and they close their eyes and they're gone. Do you watch TV? Do you listen to WBAI? Do you read a magazine? What do you do when you go to sleep? Now, I want you to consider that everybody has their own way of doing it. It is not one person does everything. It is not that all the people who go to sleep by closing their eyes go to sleep the same way. Do you share your bed with somebody? 61% of the people do. Are you part of the other 33%? Just kidding you. Just in case you're a mathematician out there. What do you wear when you go to sleep? What are your favorite garb to go to sleep in? Some people like a t-shirt only. Some people like to go to dressed in pajamas. Now, is it according to whom you're sleeping with? Or with whom you're sleeping? Is it that you might have different partners and you wear different clothing with different partners? Well, when you're alone, what do you wear that is your best way to go to sleep? What about your pillow? I know people who carry their pillow with them. I know people who take their pillow with them when they go away because they've got to have their pillow. Interesting, don't you think? How about room temperature? Do you like your room to be cool? Do you like it to be warm? Do you like the windows open? Do you like them shut? You know, do you try to screen out noise? Now, here's one for you. Firm mattresses. How firm is your mattress? People who tend to try to control other people tend to like firmer mattresses than people who are gushy. Because the gushy emotional people tend to like, believe it or not, gushy mattresses. They like softer mattresses. But you get these very rigid types, or people who tend to want to have things under control. They want a firm mattress. They want a control of every place their body moves. You ever sleepwalk? You ever sleepwalk in the middle of the night? Well, sleepwalking is a phenomenal thing. Let's take a look at some of the science of this, okay? There are many different kinds of sleep pattern things. But then there are things called sleep disorders. And sleep disorders fall into two categories. One category is called dysomnia. D-Y-S-S-O-M-N-I-A. And dysomnia is characterized by a disturbance in the amount, the quality, or the timing of sleep. you don't get enough sleep, you can't fall asleep, or the quality of your sleep is just miserable, that's a dysomnia. Among dysomnia, and the other one, by the way, is called parasomnia. The parasomnias are kind of having unusual reactions when you're not asleep, but to stuff around sleep, like the way you wake up, things like that. We're going to get to those unusual behaviors. Among the dysomnias is insomnia. Now, you all know what insomnia is. Can't sleep. And insomnia is really tough. Difficulty falling asleep, intermittent wakefulness during sleep. You know, if you sleep and you wake up and you... And now, we recently had a scientist on the show who told us about 90-minute cycles of sleep, that people tend to sleep in 90-minute cycles. But if you're waking up every 15 minutes, every 20 minutes, every hour, you know, and you just can't go back to sleep, that's insomnia. Now, insomnia could, of course, be physically related. Insomnia could be because you're sick and you can't, you know, your bones ache. And if your bones ache and you can't settle in your bones, like people who have a lot of arthritis very often find sleeping very uncomfortable. So they have to medicate themselves to go to sleep. But then there are medication-related insomnias. And I guess chemical-related insomnias, too, if you drink a cup of coffee right before you go to sleep. For some people, that's going to keep you awake for a long period of time. If you drink alcohol, alcohol is very interesting because it's predictable. People would think, I can't sleep, I'm going to get myself drunk and fall asleep. Well, what happens is you fall asleep for 3 hours. But then two things begin happening. There's an alcohol withdrawal, and you are also you also lose a lot of water. You become absolutely, you're craving, your body is craving. And so you wake up every 3 hours, and it's hard to go back to sleep, really hard. It's a very disturbed sleep, an alcohol-based sleep. One would imagine that people who drink to excess are going to get into really deep sleeps. Well, when they sleep, it's like a slumber. It's like it's like they're really falling down into a place, and it's not like a real sleep. So dysomnia, you know, among the dysomnias, you have this insomnia, which is one, and that's in the middle of a course. There are people who sleep short sleeps. You know, they have very, very short amount of sleeps. They can't sleep more than like 3-4 hours. There are breathing-related sleep disorders. There are people who have apnea and people who snore and people who have other kinds of things where they can't really get a full night's sleep because they don't get the oxygen that they need, and so they're waking up because of it. There's a sleep disorder due to a general medical condition, which I talked about. And then there's a substance-induced sleep disorder, insomnia type, which could mean either from taking any number of drugs or chemicals will keep you awake and have your sleep be fitful. These are primary insomnias. Now, another form of dysomnia is called primary hypersomnia. Hypersomnia is just what it sounds like. Yep, excessive sleepiness. You sleep too much, and you don't stop. I mean, if people didn't wake you up, you'd sleep for 10 hours, 12 hours. And you do it for at least 1 month. You have a tendency to do it, and it can lead to a lot of distress and dysfunction in work. Hypersomnia throws your body out of whack. It's as bad as insomnia. In other words, your body, you think, you know, that when you sleep, your body repairs. Well, if your body doesn't have the rhythm between wake and sleep, oversleep does significant damages to the body, including a low level of alertness. You know, you're not as alert because you're kind of, your body's always saying, let's go back to bed, let's go back to bed, let's go back to bed. Real disturbance with your relationships, real hard to do a job, because you can't get up in time to do your job. If you have kids, you know, and you sleep that long, those kids are deprived of their parents. So we have hypersomnia, and insomnia. But those aren't that interesting. Sleep too much, sleep too little. Certainly, nowadays, it's so easy to find out what's wrong with you. You go get it checked out, because there's a lot of reason to get it checked out. You know, you could have something like narcolepsy and not know about it. Narcolepsy is a thing, is that disease where a person falls asleep in the middle of a day and they just nod out and they can't control it. They're narcoleptics. And it's a form of epilepsy. It's not like, you know, they just got a bad habit of sleeping. In fact, much of this is not that psychological. You know, it's sometimes very physical, not only psychological. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to be wanting to hear from you about your sleeping pattern. Who do you like to sleep with the most? You got a favorite? You have a favorite person you like to sleep with? And when that person's not present, how is your sleep different? I knew a couple that used to get up and actually scramble out of bed so that they could, they had to rush off to work all the time. They were always in a rush, always in a rush. And when they went to sleep, they never got a real sleep. But when they slept with their partner, boyfriend, girlfriend, the sleep was just incredible. That 1 hour of rest, holding the person you love in your arms, seems to make up for 10 hours of being alone. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Tender sleep, eh? Tender sleep is just wonderful. You sleep with your children? Did your mother sleep with you? You know, did you sleep with your mom? How late did you sleep with your mom? If you live in a house alone, do your children get into bed with you? What are the rules of your bed? What if you have pets? Are the dogs and cats allowed in the bed with you when you're alone, or with you and your husband? You want to really confuse a cat? You go out with a guy who doesn't like to sleep with a cat in his face, and whenever he sleeps over, the cat's not allowed on the bed, but whenever he's not there, the cat is allowed on the bed. So then he comes over and he tries to pet your cat, and the cat scratches him, and he says, "Why does a cat scratch me?" Well, it just so happens that every time you come over, this cat can't have its normal place to sleep. And you know, cats do bond with humans. They actually will stake their turf with their paws when they start showing you. They secrete this thing from their paws and they kind of press it into your body and on your sheet, saying, "I am here and no other animal is allowed." So cats can be very jealous. And so can other people, of course. I mean, now, if you sleep with having, you know, your animals around, that's a very nice thing. Now, what about your children? Are your children allowed in bed? Are they allowed in bed with you when they're over 32 years old? When they're, you know, let's say you're 5 years old? Let's talk about sleepwalking for a minute. Sleepwalking, most popular among children age 5 to 14. Children mainly between 5 and 10 sleepwalk a tremendous amount. Now, what is sleepwalking? Sleepwalking is walking while you sleep, just exactly that. And if you're a parent, you learn it. Did you ever see your children walking in the middle of the night? They will walk right, they will be dead asleep, and they'll find them walking, and they walk around. Now, there are other sleep disturbances that happen in later life to people with dementia or Alzheimer's, where they walk around, but they're not sleepwalking. They're actually awake. When they're out, they can't sleep, so they're up late at night walking around. But that's not sleepwalking. Sleepwalking is when you're asleep and you're walking. And sleepwalking, it's a sleep disorder. It affects 10% of all humans at least once in their life. At some point, 1 out of 10 people did it. Now, the trouble with sleepwalking, of course, is you could get in a lot of trouble if you walk out of your house. There is a recent report of a recent phenomenon, which has to do with, in England, I think they were talking about women who would and men who would get up in the middle of the night and sleepwalk looking for sex. And they would find some way of having sex, and they would stay asleep through the whole thing. And then they would go home, not knowing what happened, you know, because the sleepwalking was over. Now, that's some kind of an unusual form of sleepwalking, but it is reported, and it is indicated. And I imagine a woman who does that, you know, maybe getting up out of bed from her husband, going out somewhere in the street, having sex with somebody, probably unprotected sex, coming back home, and then giving birth to a child who might be blonde-haired, blue-eyed when you don't expect that anywhere in your genes, you know. And telling, if they gave you a lie detector, did you ever sleep with anybody else? The answer is no. Sleepwalking is a very interesting thing. Now, I bet you think that this is weird. I bet you think not many people do it. There's a lot of people sleepwalking. And there's quite a few doing this sleep sexing out there in the world. So sleepwalking is one form of it. Now, here's another. How about nightmares? Let's talk about parasomnia. Parasomnia is abnormal behaviors that occur while you are sleeping or during sleep transitions. Parasomnia. One such is nightmares. Don't you hate nightmares? Nightmares are such a thing. I'm going to teach you a trick about nightmares that I learned, and it's been great ever since. Okay, now that's going to come later. I'm going to tell you the nightmaring story first. Nightmares are different than night terrors. You see, when you wake up with a night terror, you're very disoriented. You feel a sense of panic. You wake up in a panic, and you don't know what's going on. And there may be a short image. You may say, there was a man climbing in the window. It may be something like that, but you really have no story. Nightmares have a story. Nightmares, I was walking down the street, and this man crawled in the window, and then he was walking after me, and then he started chasing me, and I was running away, and I couldn't get away because I fell on top of a piece of bread, and then I went into the bakery, and the man was really cooking pasta, and, you know, the nightmares have real interesting stories. That was one of my dreams once. And the stories just get really interesting, and they get fascinating, and they get intricate, and then it gets scary. Well, in a nightmare, you wind up screaming, Mommy, or something like that. And if you're a kid, your mother comes running in, What's the matter? What's the matter? There's a man. He was in the closet, and he started beating up on me, and he ran away. And you say something like that, and your parent is there, and they reassure you, Oh, don't worry, honey. There's no such thing. You don't have to worry about it. Go to sleep. Nightmares. Nightmares. People who have nightmares wake up, but there's a whole story. Now, it's an important distinction. Night terrors are really started by the amygdala. A little gland in the back of your neck suddenly gets an electrical charge. Suddenly it goes, its pH balance changes, or something happens inside your skin, and you get this kind of electrical charge, and it sends like a bolt of lightning to your amygdala, and the amygdala now senses, oh my God, it gets fully charged. Now, your amygdala generally gets charged when you have some kind of terror feeling. If you were in the world and something forced your amygdala to fire at the level that it fires, you would be in physical danger. So since the amygdala suddenly, while you're sleeping, gets stimulated, you wake up and say, there's danger somewhere, because it's automatic. You've got to look for danger. If you were sleeping in a tree, like you say you were a baboon once, and you were sleeping in a tree, and you were sleeping very calmly, and a lion started crawling up on the tree, and you unconsciously recognized it, your amygdala would wake you up, and the first thing you'd do is look and say, where's the danger? So when you have a night terror, you wake up and you say, where's the danger? And that's the first thing you say to yourself, and you make it up. If the closet's a little open, you say, there's a man in the closet. You make it up. There's a lion coming to eat me. You know, you make it up, but there's no real story to it. Night terrors. And night terrors do not go away the minute a person wakes up. It takes time. It's like a panic attack. It takes time for it to go away. They don't necessarily just respond to your kind words. They certainly respond to you being there. But if you look at somebody waking from night terrors, they wake up, they sit up straight, and they're staring, almost staring out into space, and there's a sense of panic. They got to get up. Sometimes they got to get up, got to get out of the bed. They have this panicky feeling. Nightmares are fear. something frightening is happening, but you generally don't get out of bed on a nightmare. Now, the secret about nightmares, I'm going to give you my secret that I discovered. I had a secret about nightmares. It was I forgot what I was doing with my life. But I had this nightmare that I was giving a lecture somewhere in Philadelphia. True story. True story. And I was, 22, 23 years old. I don't know why I was giving a lecture in Philadelphia. But I ran into a gang of hoodlums who surrounded my car, and they were breaking into my car as I was late at night, and I saw them, and they had everything. They had weapons. They had, you know, guns and knives, and no, not guns. They had knives and tire rods and things like that, and I said, "What are you doing?" And they said, "What are you doing here?" Right? And so they started to menace me with this. Now, I must let you know, I grew up in a gang environment, so I'm real familiar with a kind of a menacing gang world. So there I was, scared and powerless. I had nothing to fight with. And I woke up in a panic. I woke up and I had a nightmare. It was my nightmare. I woke up. I remember waking up and I was like, they were coming to get me. They were just going to beat me up. And I woke up and there was nobody around. I woke up and I said, it was a dream. I said to myself, which is what you usually do when you have a nightmare. So I said, but I don't like it. I'm afraid to go back to sleep because I don't want these. I got an idea. I'm going to go back to sleep with a submachine gun. And I went back to sleep and I imagined myself having a submachine gun. And then I went back to sleep and I created the dream so that they came after me. And they were coming after me and I pulled out my submachine gun and I said, "Oh, no, you don't." And they said, "Oh, you got a submachine gun." And they ran away and I got in my car and it was fine. So I corrected my nightmare. And since then, I've learned the trick of every time I have a nightmare, which is not frequently, but if I ever do, I go back and correct it. Sometimes I may have a dream that I'm missing somebody, I'm looking for somebody. And I wake up calling out for somebody I'm looking for. I go back to sleep and I find them. See, you could do this. And it's a thing. And it's called lucid dreaming. But it's a cure for nightmares. It's very good. But you can't do it with sleep terrors. Sleep terrors, nothing solves it. You know, you kind of just hope that it goes away. So we have, of the parasomnias, we have nightmare disorder, we have which is nightmares, we have sleep terrors. Then there's another one that happens, and this is really interesting. Some of you are going to know this. If you get wakened in the middle of the night, sometimes if somebody wakes you up, it's not you who wakes up, but it's like the devil wakes up. Some other person wakes up. And even though you're awake, you could be extra nasty, like so nasty. It's almost as if we have an unconscious part of the people who do this, have an unconscious part of them that is rageful, that is protecting them from sleep. And so let's say there's an emergency and you have to get up, or the phone rings and you have to get up, or somebody wakes you up. You wake up and you're downright nasty. Now, one would imagine that, you know, it's okay to be angry because you wake up in the middle of the night. But this kind of nasty is like a real nasty person. Wakes up and says, "What do you need? What do you need? You need this, I'll get you this." Right? "You need this, I'll take care of this." And do it with such nastiness. And then they go right back to sleep. This is a character that gets unearthed. And it happens to many people. It happens to about 5% of the people who report these kind of sleep disturbances. They have like this evil demon. But it's not really an evil demon. What it's doing is protecting the sleep itself. This is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive of Mind. Isn't it interesting stuff about sleep? So when you think about the fact that therapists don't even ask you about your sleep, or they tend to ignore it in you. They tend to ignore, you go to say, "How do you sleep?" "I sleep well, thank you." No, there's so much. Do you have a glass of water near your bed when you go to sleep? Do you have a bottle of water, a glass of water? Is it a covered glass? Is it an open glass? You know? Do you ever get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom? Are you awake when you go to the bathroom? There are some people who get up in the middle of the night and they go to the bathroom and their mate, whoever happens to be around, starts talking to them. And, of course, you don't want to talk to anybody if you're just going to the bathroom. You maintain a certain level of sleep that's a half sleep. And so when people start talking to you, hey, you know, I'm glad you're up. I was just reading this article. And you want to say to them, no, I'm sleeping. But, of course, you're really peeing. You're going to the bathroom, you know, but you say, I'm sleeping. And you kind of keep that other person away. I'd like to hear some of your sleep stories. I'll bet there's some interesting stories out there. You know, we're going to take calls a little later about sleep and your sleeping patterns. So sleepwalking, as we talked about, is one of those things that happen. And we talked about parasomnias. What do you do? What's your pattern when you go to sleep? What do you do? Now, are there rituals before you go to sleep? You have a ritual? You have a specific thing you do? You wash your face, right? Do you wash your face? Do you do your hair? What do you do? What do you do? What's there got to be on your bed? What's the light got to be like? Do you darken all the light? Some people are so sensitive to melatonin that melatonin is not produced when there's any form of light. So they need total darkness, and they need absolute darkness, and there can't be the lightest thing. And I know one or two people who talk about the little light that they have on a video machine that's on all night, or on a TiVo machine that's on all night. They can't stand it. They got to cover up the light. They actually cover up the TV light because there can't be any light. Is your bed your friend? Now, if you think about it, there are many things in life that we could consider our friends. You know, you may have a sweater that's a good friend. Do you have a sweater that's a friend? You put it on and you say, hi, old buddy. I'm so glad you're here. Thank you very much. Is your bed your friend? One of the biggest mistakes that married couples or any couple make when they live together is they get a king-sized bed. You don't need a king-size bed. King-size bed, queen-size bed seems to be big enough. King-size bed, when people get a king-size bed, they generally use it all by sleeping separately. And it's almost like you're sleeping in a bed where you don't know the other person. I had one couple I treated who had a king-size bed. I had them put slats, you know, just put like a 2x4 underneath the sides of the mattresses so that they'd roll together in the middle of the bed. Because by habit, they would roll away from each other and just have no contact. And there's something about having contact in the middle of the night that makes you a lot closer than having no contact. Sleeping on the other side of the bed is like sleeping in another room. There's just some vague familiarity of somebody being there. But it's really quite often a mistake. This big, giant territory that you don't need. So, but your bed, you know, if it's your bed, is it your friend? They say you should change your mattress every 2 years. Somebody said you should always get a new mattress every 2 years. I don't remember what that is, but it's one of the, every 2 years get a new mattress. There's something about sleeping on a new mattress that seems to be magnificent, you know, but your bed turned around, your bed, is your bed your friend? When we come back from our break, I'm going to play you two things. Number one, I'm going to play you today. I want to play you a story. I want to give you a bedtime story. This is fantastic. I discovered this. What you're going to hear, and I'll start playing it after we do our break in the middle, which was coming up right now, you're going to hear Meryl Streep reading a short section of my favorite story, one of my favorite stories called The Velveteen Rabbit. And in this story, the question that the child asks, the skin horse, which is a horse, a toy horse, is what is it like to be real? If you've ever wondered what it's like to be real yourself instead of living your artificial life, the answer is right here in this story. So I'll be playing this story for you as soon as we get back from our break. Thanks.
Longer in the nursery than any of the others. He was so old that his brown coat was bald in patches and showed the seams underneath, and most of the hairs in his tail had been pulled out to string bead necklaces.
just going to stop for a quick second to tell you, the skin horse is, remember, in the nursery. It's just a nursery toy with a bunny that is a toy, and these are both toys, and they're talking to each other. The skin horse has been around the longest time, and the bunny is asking the skin horse, what's it like to be real? Just to give you that as an introduction back to Meryl Streep.
He was wise, for he had seen a long succession of mechanical toys arrive to boast and swagger, and by and by break their mainsprings and pass away. He knew that they were only toys, and would never turn into anything else. For nursery magic is very strange and wonderful, and only those playthings that are old and wise and experienced, like the skin horse, understand all about it. "What is real?" asked the rabbit one day. "Does it mean having things that buzz inside you and a stick-out handle?" "Real isn't how you are made," said the skin horse. "It's a thing that happens to you. When a child loves you for a long, long time, not just to play with, but really loves you, then you become real." "Does it hurt?" Sometimes, for he was always truthful. "When you are real, you don't mind being hurt." "Does it happen all at once, like being wound up, or bit by bit?" "It doesn't happen all at once. You become. It takes a long time. That's why it doesn't often happen to people who break easily, or who have sharp edges, or who have to be carefully kept. Generally, by the time you are real, most of your hair has been loved off, and your eyes drop out, and you get loose in the joints and very shabby. But these things don't matter at all, because once you are real, you can't be ugly, except to people who don't understand. I suppose you are real." And then he wished he had not said it, for he thought the skin horse might be sensitive. But the skin horse only smiled. "The boy's uncle made me real. That was a great many years ago. But once you are real, you can't become unreal again. It lasts for always." The rabbit sighed. He thought it would be a long time before this magic called real happened to him. He longed to become real, to know what it felt like. And yet, the idea of growing shabby and losing his eyes and whiskers was rather sad. He wished that he could become it without these uncomfortable things happening to him.
Kathleen Battle at the end from her So Many Stars album, Hush Little Horses. Kathleen Battle, what a voice. Oof. That's with Grover Washington Jr. It's Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. I almost went to sleep myself just then. I heard the end of the Marjorie Williams That was Meryl Streep. Marjorie Williams wrote The Velveteen Rabbit. I recommend the book. I recommend the album. It's such a beautiful story. Read it to your children. So what are the secrets about your sleep? Tell me about your sleep patterns. 212-209-2900. How do you sleep? Do you go to sleep? What's your pattern when you go to sleep? Could I have that back? What's your pattern when you go to sleep? Do you like to have your special pillow? What's odd about you and the way you sleep? What's idiosyncratic? What is all you? And what is it that people don't understand? Do you find it impossible to sleep with anyone else? You know, there are people that snore, and they have mates, and their mates have no trouble sleeping. And then that very person who has no trouble sleeping with her mate that snores can be in another place where somebody else is snoring, and they can't sleep. So you could have a snore sensitivity with certain people, and you could not have a snore sensitivity with other people. So snoring, you know, even though one would imagine is a bad thing, to some people, to some mates, it kind of makes them feel safe. Oh, yeah, he snores like a, you know, snores like a silverback. Anyway, you know, if in case you think you don't snore, you must one day try getting a voice-activated recorder. If somebody tells you you snore, but you don't believe it, because, you know, how could you know that you really snore? You can only do it from somebody else because you don't know you snore. You have to get a self-activated recorder, one of these voice-activated recorders. They're cheap, a little tape recorder. You put it by your bedside, and it gets activated by a voice, by a sound. So it's by your bedside, and then you will hear yourself snore. And I promise you, when you hear yourself snore, you're going to feel very humble. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take a couple of your calls here on WBAI, talking about sleeping and sleep patterns. Hi there, 212-209-2900. You're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Oh, hey, Armand.
Hi there.
All right, well, the one thing wacky about my sleep pattern, well, there's two things wacky. One, I wake up in the middle of the night, and everyone thinks that I'm fully conscious, and I hold conversations with people, and I remember nothing. I was in college, out of state. My mother called me one morning. I had a whole conversation with her. I spoke to her that afternoon. I remembered nothing. And she said, "You were really nice on the phone." Because we usually sometimes will fight. But she called me, and I was completely asleep. And I think my words to her were, "Oh, hey, Mom, you're the best. I love you." And I don't remember anything.
Yeah, and have you ever had that reflected by anybody you've ever slept with?
No.
I mean, who else told you besides your mother?
No, my wife has told me that. I'll wake up and I'll say things to her in the middle of the night. She'll say things to me. I'll talk to her and remember nothing.
So it's like a somnambulatory oration. There's kind of this this thing that you forget, you know? You forget it and you say certain things. And
I said some wacky stuff.
What have you said?
Oh, like, well, what did I say? I said one time I woke up and I was talking about wobbling pants. Like, I'll recite, like, what I was dreaming. And it's just funny. So she gets a kick out of it.
Yeah, and you know, what I'm saying to you is about the part of you that wants to protect you while you're sleeping. Sometimes that part, there is a character that wakes up in the middle, and then the interesting thing is going to be what time this happens to you. If you ever find out, if you could find out how far after you went to sleep does this happen? Because people sleep in 90-minute cycles. And if it's in the middle of a 90-minute cycle, very often it'll happen. It'll be like going to the bathroom. You know, you won't be aware that you did it. And it happens right in the middle of that. And then if somebody talks to you during that time, you're kind of protecting the sleep. So you're saying whatever is required at the moment.
See,
that
I don't
keep
know about
everything
that.
Peaceful.
Maybe. But
yep, maybe. What do you think it might be? You think you're living with an inner character that nobody knows about?
I don't really. I think that, yeah, I don't know. I wake up, I talk to people, I don't remember it. I've said things to people, they have thought I was awake. But the strangest thing about my dreams is that I'll have, like, really, like, vivid, scary nightmares, and I'll always have these wacky dreams about, like, being late, about being a failure, about being these things. I have them all the time. And I wake up in the morning, and I think, oh, I had one of those dreams over the night. And I almost get angry. I get kind of like a kick out of my body trying to, like, I don't know what it's trying to do when I'm asleep, But it has, like, I wake up and I'm thinking, oh, my body's one crazy. Like, I'm almost, like, embarrassed by my subconscious. It's almost like, why is this my subconscious always trying to, like, spook me in the middle of the night? And then I wake up and I'm like, oh, wasn't that a funny little, stupid little neurotic dream I had? It's like, I don't know. Do people
so
really
get affected by
their dreams?
So it sounds like you're waking up and you parent yourself when you wake up. You know,
yeah.
You're really kind to yourself in a way. But, you know, it is indicating something that you're suggesting. There are some unconscious feelings that are preconscious that seems to be coming up in your dreams.
Yeah.
And they do want your attention.
Yeah.
And
but
so it might not be such a terrible idea to take that and actually pay attention to those things instead of just dismissing them.
But the thing
not
is,
pay attention to them and feel bad, but pay attention to them in a curious way, as a way of uncovering things about yourself so that it just doesn't go in the unconscious.
But then again, the problem is that I feel like the fears that I have of being late, I have those when I'm awake. Like, I'm always afraid of, like, forgetting something and being late to class. Like, I've been out of college for a couple of years, but I always have dreams about being late to college classes. And in my college career, I was never late. I was late to one class in years of college, and it never happened. I never miss a test. I never miss anything. But I always have dreams about missing them. And it's almost like I wish my subconscious would, like, get over it, because it's almost like I moved on and I'm not late. I don't have a problem with being late, but my subconscious is still stuck in, like, kindergarten. It's like, it's strange.
Yeah, I understand. And what I'm saying to you again is there's stuff there that's pressing to come out that it would be really interesting for you to explore, just as an exploration of yourself.
I wish I could have, like, a sit-down conversation with my subconscious and tell him, like,
you can.
I know you're trying to help me, and I know you're trying to protect me, and I know you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, like, making, you're supposed to, like, what the subconscious does, but I'm almost like, all right, buddy, I've had enough of it. It's good. It's nice that you give me these dreams.
So I recommend,
like,
what's your name, by the way?
Evan.
Evan, I recommend you find yourself a gestalt therapist.
Maybe.
They specialize in doing these dialogues. Or look up on gestalt therapy and try to find out how you could do these dialogues. And it's a very dialogue you may be able to have.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good idea.
Yep.
Thanks
okay,
for calling in, Evan. Sure.
Have fun.
Sure. 212-209-2900. So the opposite of waking up and being angry, he wakes up and is nice and he forgets it. That's called amnesia, by the way. You know, it's kind of a funny thing. You've heard of the word amnesia, which means you forget things. When you amnesize a dream, it means you have a dream that you forget about. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Armand?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Yvonne.
Hello, Yvonne.
I am 53 years old, and since I was like 5 years old, I've had this, just about the same nightmare.
And what is the nightmare?
It always ends up on someone trying to kill me. It's always after me.
Someone is chasing you?
Yes.
With a knife?
Either with a knife, with a gun, or I get the feeling like to rape me. It's always to hurt me.
Always to hurt you. And when you,
yes.
Where do you, you've had this since you've been how old?
About 5 years old.
About 5 years old. Now, was there anything in your childhood that was really scary? Where did you grow up? Colombia?
Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico. In Puerto Rico, was there anything about your, where you were growing up that was a dangerous place?
Well, I come from a violent home. That's one thing.
Yeah, I could hear, right.
And the only other thing that I remember as a child was this man that was crazy and escaped the sanitarium and was running after my sisters and I believe with a knife.
Wow.
And, but, you know, it's really bad. Really bad. My husband at times, I've married 30 years, and I have the greatest husband in the world, thank God. And he says to me at times, you know, the neighbor's supposed to be thinking I'm beating you up in the middle of the night, the way you scream. And he always tells me, you need to look for help. But
so have you ever looked for help?
No.
Why?
I don't know. I just never really went for it.
Went for what?
For the help.
I know, but why? Why would you? Why do you think you wouldn't? You got something that wakes you up in the middle of the night that disturbs you and your relationship with your husband, right? And you've got something that sounds like some variation on a post-traumatic stress disorder from early childhood. There's got to be a reason why at 53 years old you didn't ever go to somebody and say, help me with this, I'm having these nightmares.
I guess you're right, Armand. I never
I'm not right. I'm just wondering what you say to yourself. What do you say to yourself about, no, I'm not going to do it?
You know, I never really think about it. You know, when it happens, he just tells me, you know, there you go again with the nightmares. I keep telling you to look for help, but I never really pay much, you know, much attention.
Well, I'll tell you what I think. I think you have associated to your nightmare some early memories from childhood that were very painful. I am sure that you have heard your father beating your mother. And in some part of that, is that true? I mean, do you remember that?
Yes.
Yes. I'm sure that's what it sounds like. And when that's true, it imbues, it kind of puts a terror into a child that's so big that the child doesn't want to think about it. The memory is so bad you don't want to remember it. Now, if this is the case, if you've taken the memory of your mother being beaten by your father and the horror of that to you, and the powerlessness you felt about that, you're going to convert that into a dream that's going to live that over and over again until you're willing to face those pains from childhood. And I know why you've avoided ever going into therapy about it, because the reality of what you went through is, believe it or not, worse than your nightmare. You were through something that was worse than the nightmare. Mm-hmm. And that's why you don't want to uncover it. Because you're afraid of it. You know, you're afraid of how big it is.
I tell you,
I don't think it's going to hurt you to go through it, because I think you're going to go through it and get free.
Armand, I'm the one in my family that everybody comes to.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And I'm the one that everybody leans on. And I'm the one that, for some reason, I feel like I have to save the world. And I don't know if that has anything to do with that same childhood.
Well, same thing. You're the one who had to save your mother, but you couldn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that true?
I did everything for my mother till she died.
That's right. That's right. That's what is your birthday October 10th?
No, July. July 6th.
July 6th. And so when you were 5 years old?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you remember 5 years old, right? Okay. Well, listen, so if you ever want help with that, you know, feel free to get in touch with me.
What is your number, Armand?
Find me through the website, thepositivemind.com.
Okay.
Okay?
Thank
Great.
You so much. God
sure.
bless.
Bye-bye. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Kendra. My question is regarding amnesia you were speaking of, that I don't remember my dreams. I mean, not since I was a child have I ever been able to remember, you know, anything that I dreamt.
It's a funny thing, not remembering dreams. Let me ask you other things. What do you remember about the best, most pleasurable experience, the nicest time you ever had with your father?
With my father?
Yeah.
Well, I would have to think on that. I mean, we have a very good relationship, so a lot
and
of...
And did you have one when you were little?
Yeah. Well, no, not as much when I was younger.
What was the problem when you were younger?
He was a little stricter then, and so, you know, there was more of a, you know, authority. He was more of an authoritative, controlling figure then. And as I got older, we became friends, and, you know, have traveled together and done lots of things together. And so I have a lot of good memories. But
and what about your mom?
She was even more controlling than him, and we haven't had, you know, so good of a relationship.
So your early childhood is kind of filled with not good stuff. It was
right.
later that you got the good stuff.
Right.
Right? And so what you're saying is back then it wasn't so hot. How about back then when you were a kid it was really terrible? Would you say that?
That's relative. I mean, relative to how bad it could have been, no. But relative to how good it could have been, yeah, maybe it's terrible. I mean, terrible seems to be a broad term. I don't know if I would define it as terrible. At the time, maybe I thought it was terrible.
Here's the reason I ask. I find that most people who cannot remember their dreams tend to have a fear of feeling angry towards their parents. Now, that's what I found. It found that there's something in the unconscious that wants to block certain things from memory, and that it learned even to block early childhood from memory. No, I'm sorry. If you had two parents that were so so restricting in so many ways and controlling. It doesn't matter comparatively for you. It was a terrible childhood. Now, it doesn't take much to go into that and experience that and see what that's like and come out of it, you know. But in your mind, you've kind of got this rationalization. And now you're friends with your dad. You don't want to open up a can of worms. But it probably relates to the fact that there's stuff back there you don't want to look at.
So when
you tell the mind, I want you to shut stuff off that's in the unconscious, it shuts off the dreams as well.
So how can I begin to heal, I guess, and be able to have dreams that I remember?
Well, why don't you try writing down what your real memories are from childhood without making it good? Why don't you try doing a journal, a story, about how you felt when you were little and how you remember the worst moments when you were a kid? You know, and see what that's like to open it up. You could do it with or without a therapist. A therapist could be helpful in helping you explore it, but try it as an early journal. And then watch the rationalization. Watch the part of you that says, but it wasn't so bad.
Huh. I will. Thank you.
Sure, Kendra. Armand DeMille here with you with The Positive Mind. 212-209-2900. We're going to take one more call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. Hi, it's Barbara calling. How are you?
Hello, Barbara. Good to hear from you.
Oh, thank you. I just love your shows. I'm calling because I like to share what my sleep patterns are like.
Sure.
I love my bed, first of all.
Love your bed. It's amazing. I mean, you're one person saying it. I know
really?
People who love their beds more than they love anything.
Okay. Well, no, I love other things, but I love my bed. And I'm very much accustomed to sleeping with my husband, so if he takes a long time getting to bed, I might wake up to find out where he might be.
Find out where he is?
Yeah, where he is. And
what if he goes on a trip? Does he ever go on a trip?
Oh, yeah, he goes on a trip, and sometimes I'll sleep with his pillow.
Oh, how cute. That's great. That's great. You won't sleep in his T-shirt. You'll sleep in his pillow.
I'll sleep on his pillow.
You keep a dirty T-shirt around.
Yeah.
You know, keep a T-shirt that he used
right somewhere
around, because those fragrances stay in there forever.
Right, and I've done that, too. I've done that as well. And I like wearing an eye mask. I really, really appreciated when you said that when we're awakened during the night and this other part of ourselves come out and we're just like, you know, very evil or...
A monster type, yeah.
And that happened to my children. One of my daughters, the kids were sitting around laughing about things that happened when they were kids with me, and they reminded me of how I must have darkness and quiet. So if I went to bed before they did when they were teenagers, they would be very careful about being quiet. But one particular night, this is sort of embarrassing for me to even share this, but one particular night my daughter said that they would do things like put a towel up to my door so I wouldn't see the light if they had to turn on the light for any reason outside my room, and she was happened to pass by and sneezed, and I woke up, and I was a monster.
Yes, and I've heard of that. I've heard of that happening frequently. I wish I could talk more about it, but we're running out of time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But yes, and the same people who are sensitive to light tend to have that same wake-up sensitivity. Because it means you're a dark sleeper, not a light sleeper.
Right.
You're a dark sleeper. You sleep in the dark, and you need the dark.
I do.
Do you try to find the biggest face mask you could find?
Yes, I do.
So there's no leaky holes in it?
Right.
I know exactly what you mean. Thanks for calling in.
All right, Armand. Thank you.
Bye-bye. This is Armand DeMille with The Positive Mind. I've got to be going, and I'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends. If you want to get a copy of today's program, you can go to WBAI.org, or if you want, thepositivemind.com. That's how you can reach me. Bye-bye.